Hey, and welcome back to another episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. My name is Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits, and welcome to another amazing pod. I love this quote: never let yourself get too comfortable. Seek challenges, push yourself, and don't let others' perceptions define you or your journey. I think that absolutely describes this week's guest, Ed Molitor. Ed is a guy with a basketball background. He played at Creighton, then went on later to coach at Texas A&M. And then personal issues got in his way, which he had to sort out and get his life together. And he learned so much about that. He now has a company called the Molitor Group, and he teaches people how to be purposeful, positive, and energetic to unlock their true potential. Who wouldn't want that? I do. I'd sign up for that any day of the week. Okay, so he's coming in just a minute, and I love to give people a reminder of this because I'm really getting fired up. Tis the season for Mount Everest, and everybody's heading in that direction, and that's where I will be 12 months from today's broadcast here in early April 2019. I'll be headed over there, obviously, in 2020, and it's all because I did step into the fear, which has now taken me all over the world and brought me so many gifts, okay? So stay tuned for more stuff coming up about my big, epic climb. And then, as always, I want to let people know and remind you about my e-learning course on my website called Finding Your Summit, okay? Go figure. It's on my website, as I said, markpattisonnfl.com, and you can find out about my public speaking, my mountains, and other really cool things that I have going on. And if you haven't already done so, please go to iTunes and rate and review. I'm telling you, it matters so much in the big scheme of things. The more ratings and reviews you get, the more popular your show becomes. And I really believe that this show benefits everybody from looking at others for inspiration on how they can improve their game. So please go there and do that if you can. And you can navigate over to iTunes through my website, markpattisonnfl.com, through the link podcast, and you can, it takes you right through there. Okay, so check it out. And finally, this pod is sponsored by violetsorblueskincare.com with Cynthia Besteman. She's a rock star and had to overcome her own adversity. She's awesome. Okay, so let's go listen to Ed. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, beaming all the way from Sun Valley, Idaho, in my recording studio to Chicago, we've got Ed Molitor. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm doing outstanding. How are you doing, Mark?
Well, one of the reasons why I love being introed to you from a common and mutual friend, Stephen Wassner, is that essentially at the core, you're an ex-jock. And it sounds like, I think you're essentially a gym rat. You've had an amazing career, a colored career, and you're doing things right now to really help people. But I want to get into kind of like the early days of you. My background, as you know, is really, although I played three different sports, it really centered around football. Football for me always felt like I was born with that football in my hand. Right. And I had that instinct to run on the field. I was a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, so skill position guy. And I loved it. And sound like you grew up in the greater Chicago area, and you had the great fortune of having a dad, a great mentor, who essentially was not only a dad, but a coach for 32 years at a particular high school. But where did your whole love of basketball come from? Where did that come from?
Well, like you, Mark, I was born with the ball in my hand, but it was a basketball. I grew up around the game. I grew up in a gym. My dad is from the old school of the Catholic League. He was a coach on the South Side of Chicago when I was born at Marist High School. And as long as I can remember, one of my strengths and one of my weaknesses, one of my curses, is I have a pretty good memory that goes way back. And yeah, for as long as I can remember, I can remember being in that gym at Marist, always wanting to dribble, always wanting to shoot, always hanging around the guys. I couldn't even count on two hands how many times I got stuffed in lockers before the age of 6 years old. You know, and I loved it. It was like you always had big brothers, right? And I grew up in my dad was a father. He was a mentor. He's a best friend. And he taught me at a real early age the significance that the mind played in athletics. And I was really fortunate that way. So basketball's always kind of, it's just been around. As a matter of fact, there's probably a point in time in my life where I slept with my basketball thinking if I did that, I would get better handles or a better jump shot.
So were you more of a shooter or a playmaker or just, you know, a field general, the guard, dribbling the ball down and really setting things up?
Well, it depends who you ask. Okay. So I was a point guard. I was a point guard who could shoot a little bit. And I loved to make the guys around me better. And I loved to do whatever I needed to do to help the team win. But I always kind of had an edge, you know, being a coach's son, you're sort of more is expected of you. There's more pressure on you. You're held to a higher standard. Sometimes people hold things against you because of the way your dad coaches, you know, things of that nature. But So I was a point guard who could shoot, basically. And really, I took the most pride I took was on the defense end of the floor.
Yeah, you know, there's a podcast that I heard the other day through Jim Rome's pod, and he was talking to Bobby Hurley. And, of course, Bobby Hurley was this fantastic point guard like you that played for his dad, longtime coach, somewhere in New Jersey, and then ultimately went on to Duke and essentially was in, I think, three or four Final Fours, mm-hmm. which is incredible, won, I think, two of them. Crystal Leitner, and really interesting just to sit and listen to all the lessons learned in life that have translated into what he did post professional basketball, which now he's the head coach at Arizona State.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I've always been a huge fan of Bobby Hurley. I have a friend of mine and a gentleman I used to coach who's working with Bobby now, and I've had the good fortune of sitting down with Bobby's dad and having dinner. But I, you know, like Bobby, my dad taught me more about life than he did about the game of basketball, and he taught me quite a bit about the game of basketball. And that was his big thing. Playing basketball for my dad, you got a lot more out of it than just the game. And it was probably the best class you were ever going to take in high school. And it wasn't, that's not to demean any teachers or any subjects, but that was his sole intent, was to get you ready for the next level, whether it be education, whether it be your career. And one of the big traditions for my dad when he was at Palatine, his last 32 years, was guys would come back at Christmas. And that's when I really realized the impact that he was having on them, because you would hear the stories and they would sit and talk to the team and they would talk about how the lessons they learned going through adversity, you know, getting outside their comfort zone, being pushed to the edge, being a great teammate, being loyal, something we really don't talk a whole lot about today, you know, work ethic and passion and purpose and enthusiasm. And those are things that were just a way of life to me. That was just normal talk around our house. I was hearing things that other kids my age, whether it be 8 or when I was 18, they weren't hearing at home. So that gave me, I think, an advantage when I got out into the so-called real world.
Well, one of the things you talked about is sports is a microcosm of life. And yes. I couldn't agree with you anymore on exactly what that is. And, you know, I look at my own life and, you know, it's interesting because I'm almost 6'3 and 200 pounds. And that's a lot of what fueled me through playing in the NFL and college, major college at the University of Washington. But, you know, my parents are like 5'6" and 5'7". Right. And my dad, unfortunately, passed away. But the things that were taught to me, I can't imagine what my life would be like today. So much of my head coach, Don James, teaching me about the pyramid of success, something that, again, another basketball great, John Wooden, had taught. Yep. 25 different blocks on individual and team goals, mm-hmm. Really teaching you about, if you apply those exact same principles, work on yourself, what do you need to do to get the next step? And then that incorporates into the ultimate, you know, if it's a team or a company or some group thing that you're trying to do, it all leads towards the pinnacle of success. And without doing these steps, or maybe said the other way, by cheating those steps, you just can't get to where we all want to go. And we all have different paths, but it's the same principle from one to the other.
There's no question. And, you know, Coach Wooden talked about the self-realization for him was competitive greatness. And I think that's something that you just said, hit the nail on the head. You can't skip steps. You can't negotiate with the reality of the situation. You know, you have to do every single thing it takes if you want to achieve greatness. Now, you can be good. You can rely on physical skills. You can rely on gifts all you want. But in order for you to really achieve greatness and to maximize your potential, you have to be fully committed and fully vested in each and everything. And ironically, this morning, I've always talked about doing this. I have a couple of buddies that have done this, Coach Moser at Loyola, and he got it from Pete Carroll, which is a great book that Pete wrote. And he talks about how he did his own pyramid of success. And I started doing that about 5 o'clock this morning. And it's pretty interesting because it really forces you to think about what's important to you and how that plays into your overall success.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, I've come up with my own pyramid of success. I've dumbed it down. It's called SUMMITS. So it's just an acronym for accomplishment. And, you know, I've got my own thing going on, but I think there's a lot of different paths, but, you know, they all have a similar pattern. And those patterns are really, metaphorically speaking, about taking that step, one step after the other, and climbing up that mountain and doing the right things. And, you know, it was interesting. I was very blessed last week. I was not interviewed by Fox News, but I ended up on the front page of Fox News on things I'm doing. And, uh-huh. On one hand, that was really cool because, I mean, who gets on Fox News? But the other part of that was, I was brought to my attention, but there's all this comment section. And in the comment section, I mean, I just got flipping buried.
Yeah.
By all these people. Yeah. I mean, buried. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Who does this guy think he is that could do this and that?
Oh.
Yeah, no. On that,
oh,
not,
I thought,
no,
oh.
No, buried in a bad way.
Oh.
And one of the things that it was okay, right? And it was okay because, like, whether it's been football or businesses and things, I've had my ups and downs. I wouldn't be in the mountains today if I hadn't gone through a serious amount of adversity 7 years ago.
Right.
But this morning, I was climbing up, 3,200 vertical feet at 6:30 with a lamp on my head, going straight up the mountain. Most people ski down the mountain. I ski up, right? Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up in Seattle and running the stairs, and none of these people that were abusing me about, who does he think he is, were with me on those dark nights when the coaches weren't making me run. Mm-hmm. I was running on my own. I was lifting on my own. And I'm not saying look at me, because I did not have that work ethic when I first transitioned from high school, which I could kind of just get away with things because of my talent, to when I got to playing with the big boys, where I was way in over my head,
right.
And it was kind of sink or swim. You either do these things or you're not playing.
Right.
And even though I did those things, there was no certainty. There was uncertainty. Right. There wasn't like, hey, if you, run the stairs and get big and strong, that you're going to be a starter on this team. And so some of this is just blind faith. And again, doing those daily steps that you have to take to ultimately get to a place when next thing you know, you're like, wow, I'm on the summit. Holy smokes.
Right.
Put in the work, right? And that's the whole magic glue that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I just had this conversation, a similar conversation with the gentleman earlier, but two things. First of all, those folks that buried you on Fox News on the cover page, my dad always had a great saying, the dogs may bark, but the caravan moves on. I'm not sure exactly what they were saying or why they were saying it, but I find that very hard to believe. But people don't know what they don't know, right? And it is what it is. But the second thing is, you just said something that I preach to all my clients. I used to preach to all my players was what I'm working with you on, the things that we're working on. Don't get me wrong; they do not guarantee you success. But if you don't do them, I can guarantee you that you'll never be successful as you possibly could. And that's the thing. You talked about the unknown. You have to go into this knowing that nothing is going to be handed to you. You could do everything the right way, but that there's no guarantees whatsoever.
Well, to me, what you're talking about is actions create reactions. And so whether it's somebody abusing me sitting on their couch in their underwear, or somebody actually going out and doing something, you'll never know, like you just said, whether or not something works or doesn't work if you don't actually take that action to test it out and kick the tires.
Right.
And I tell my kids this all the time. I've got two girls and they're 20, 22, and it's just like, should I or shouldn't I? Shouldn't or shouldn't I? And you'll never, you get in that treading water unless you propel forward. And at least that door may shut, but then that's going to allow you to veer over, take door number two and go down that path, which is ultimately what you want to do is figure things out.
Right. And that's the thing. Just go, just do it and learn and figure it out. And because it doesn't work out, that doesn't make you a failure. You're not defined by your failures, but just run the feedback loop, figure it out and make the adjustments and you're eventually going to get headed in the right direction towards what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So listen, you go through high school, you're being coached by your dad, everything is going pretty good for you. You're talented enough to certainly play at the next level. And now you go on and ultimately you played a couple of years at Creighton.
Yep. Yep. Played 2 years at Creighton, two of the best years I've ever had. It was, we were a very close team. We were a unique team. And we had spent the summer together going into my freshman year. And, you know, I graduated on a Sunday and then the following Thursday, I'm in Omaha. And I'm 18 years old, and I didn't really understand why coach wanted us there. I wasn't at that mature level yet. But as the summer progressed and all we did was lift weights, you either went to class or worked and then played, there really wasn't a whole lot to do back then in Omaha at the age of 18. We figured out enough to do and stayed out of trouble. And but we really became close. And we ended up that year, we were picked second to last in the Missouri Valley. And we were put on NCAA probation for something that had nothing to do with us. And halfway through the season, we were taken off probation. And we ended up winning the regular season and the postseason and went to the NCAA tournament. And it was just, awesome. It was a very magical year that taught me a lot about culture. It taught me a lot about being a great teammate. It taught me a lot about the value of being a very close team off the court and what that brings to the court. So just a ton of great lessons.
Well, like all of us, at some point in time, our athletic careers come to an end. And, you know, for me, going off the cliff at 29, I was like, holy, you know what? What do I do now? And it sounds like you were able to make that transition. And maybe you always knew, because your dad was your best friend, your mentor, he was a coach, that you wanted to be in coaching. So was that an easy exit entry for you, or how did that play?
No, it's a funny question. I mean, it's a great question, but it's funny because when I went to college, I had every intent on being a doctor. And I went into Creighton as pre-med. And from the minute I walked on the campus, I completely lost sight of what I wanted to be. And I started paying attention more to just everyday college life and what I would have to be missing in order to be a pre-med student.
It takes a lot of discipline.
It does. And there's already a lot being demanded of us. And I changed my major to business and ended up graduating, transferred after 2 years at Creighton, went to St. Ambrose University and graduated with a business degree. But while I was at Creighton, one of our assistant coaches sat me down and said, listen, he goes, you grew up around the game. He goes, you're an extension of our coaching staff. I think you'd be a great coach. What do you think about that? Okay. You know, I think I'll think about that. I'll look into it. And then the closer my playing career came to an end, closer the playing career came to ending, the more I realized it was such a big part of my life and such an integral part of my life, I wanted to stay in the game. And I realized how much the game had given to me. And I took a step back and realized what an impact my dad actually had on people. And that was the path that I chose. So I went into college coaching after I graduated.
That's great. And how long were you in college coaching?
So I started at Lewis University, a Division II school here right outside Chicago in Joliet, Romeoville to be exact. I was there for 4 years. And after the fourth year there, I took an assistant job at Texas A&M. Yep. And I was there for 2 years. And my second year there was our head coach's sixth. And he was let go at the end of the season. He was reassigned, as they call it. So yeah. In other words, he was bought out. And as an assistant coach, it's not a matter of, are we going to ask you to leave? It's how fast can you get your boxes packed and get out of the office? Yeah. So at the age of 28, you're young, you're dumb. I'm like, you know what? There has to be more to life than just this. I'm going to see what else is there. When I had left Chicago to go down to A&M, I was living across the street from Wrigley Field with two of my best friends. Yep. Life was really simple. Coach basketball and do what you do in your 20s in the city. And I went back to Chicago and I got in the mortgage industry. And that's when a lot of changes started to take place in my life. And a lot of reality really hit me at that point.
Yeah. Well, look, transitioning for anybody is always difficult, from whether you're, my daughter who graduated from USC last year and now she's out finding her own way. And to, your situation you talked about when many athletes, get done playing at whatever level, my case in the NFL at 29, I'm like, okay, now what? And, it's a big void. And the big void part, in addition, is that, when you're used to going to practice every day, and you're on TV and you're catching touchdowns and, you get all the things that come along with that, or you're a coach, you get to interact and have an impact on those different kids. And then that vein is cut off. It's a hard transition.
It's awful. And now I have friends in the military, so I don't want to say my transition's awful, because what they have to go through when they
it's equally relevant to each person, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was way harder than I thought it was going to be, because here's what I did at that young age. I identified who I was with what I did, and I was very immature. Right. I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I can never forget the first night, day I walked into the mortgage office with the suit on. I'm in Old Town in Chicago, great neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, everyone was really happy for me. They're like, oh, God, you know, this is really cool. What a great thing for you. I was miserable. You know, I'm sitting around and listening to guys in the office who are still to this day dear friends of mine. And they're talking about who Illinois is recruiting, who DePaul's recruiting, I mean, I was on the other side of those conversations. You know, people were talking about who we were recruiting when I was at A&M. And it was hard for me. It was hard for me to realize I still had a why and I still had a purpose. You know, when I was coaching, my why was to make the biggest impact possible on the young men that I coached, to prepare them, right? Yep. And when I got in the mortgage business, I completely bought into the fact that people viewed you as a used car salesman. Back then, it was a refi boom in Chicago in 1998. Yeah. And I didn't understand that I was helping young people make the single biggest financial investment in their life to date. And then folks who are more mature in the real estate market, they're probably using some capital and equity, you know, looking to free that up to do some other things with it that they had built up over the years. Well, that's pretty significant stuff, but yeah. I was too young and immature, and all I was doing was wondering why. Why did this happen? How did this happen? Why me? You know, this blows. This is brutal. This isn't who I am. Well, it was who I was.
Well, look, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, People Overcoming Adversity and Finding your Way. And prior to coming on, you know, you and I talked privately, and you confided that part of that too, which helped, I don't know if it helped mask the pain of transition or what, but you found yourself with a alcohol problem, and that is something that you had to deal with.
Yeah. And you know, when I was coaching early on in my coaching career, I knew that, first of all, I know it's in my genes. If you go back down the family tree, and I've gotten to know a lot about the disease of alcoholism, and it's not prejudiced. It takes no prisoners, and it's brutal, right? It's ruthless. And I knew there was something up, you know, but I kept having fun. I kept doing okay. I kept doing well. I kept moving along. I got in the mortgage industry, and I was overcompensating for my lack of identity of who I was by going out a lot, by drinking too much. And basically I started to accumulate negative habits. There was no balance. And I always thought I could turn that off when the time came. And eventually I found myself to a point where it became physically and emotionally addictive. And that scared me, because that was the first time in my life something had really started kicking my ass, so to speak. Yeah. And it was brutal. And I kept battling, though. It wasn't like I recognized that, okay, well, I've got to make a change. And I would bounce back and forth between coaching and corporate world. And finally, and I almost died twice as a result of drinking. Once was in a single car accident when I was in coaching. I almost bled out. I went into shock. It was about 5 below, and I won't get into the whole story. Wow. Then when I got out of coaching, my wife was 7.5 months pregnant. I just shared this on my podcast the other day, and we were downtown Chicago at Northwestern at her last neurology appointment before our first child was born. And the reason she was at a neurology appointment was because she, who is the athlete of the family and the better looking one, much better looking one, but she had a massive stroke. And we had a medevac her downtown Chicago from the suburbs, and she was in ICU for a while. And part of the reason they think she had a massive stroke, because they couldn't really pinpoint what it was as a result of the stress of being married to me and where my drinking was at and what it was doing to us. And that was only the first year of our marriage. Okay. And, but anyway, so she was a high risk patient to deliver a baby. So we're at a neurology appointment, and I made a decision. I said, my daughter, because we knew we were having a daughter at that time. I said, my daughter will never know this person. She'll know about the disease. She'll know about my struggles when the time is right. I'll tell her, but this isn't the person she needs. And it's not the man my wife needs. And it's certainly not what I need. Yeah. And I need, in order to be the best father I can, the best husband I can, the best friend I can, I made a conscious decision, knowing though what the risk were, that I was going to stop drinking on my own. Well, 3 days into it, here we are at Northwestern. By the grace of God, we were there, and I had a massive seizure. And they told my dad, and imagine being my wife 7 months pregnant and hearing people scream and running out, and it's your husband laying on the floor. But that didn't get me to stop. And that's when I really realized how brutal a disease was. So after our first Christmas with Maddie, our baby, it was bad. And I looked at Nancy. I said, you got to get me out of here. I need to run to the fight and I need to figure this out. Oh. That's it. And so I went away, went out to Palm Springs for 30 days. And it just, I learned a lot. But, and this is something you and I talked about when you're kind enough to be a guest on my podcast, The Athletics of Business. When you switch from that, why is this happening to me, or how could this happen to me, to what am I going to do about it?
Yeah.
Makes a big difference. I mean, I'll never forget it. I was sitting there, and just another afternoon, and we were listening to a speaker, and I was venting to him. He goes, I get it. And that was the first time someone said to me there that they get it. Like, they get what I'm saying. And I was a minority there. Okay. I was considered older. So I was 41 or 42 at the time. Yeah. I was not there for heroin, and I was not there for meth. Okay. And so I was definitely a rare person there. Well, he said, I get it. Ed, I get it. You did not choose to have this disease. And I walked right into it. I said, no, I didn't. And I kind of went off a little bit. I said, I didn't choose it. This is not who I am. On and on. And he said, listen, you didn't choose to have this disease, but what you do with it is your choice. So he put the onus right on me, the accountability right on me, but he also let me know that I had the power to do something about it. And that's when the light bulb went on, and that right there carried over into everything that has transpired in my life since then in the last almost 6 years.
Yeah. Now look, it's a beautiful story. Number one. Number two is, thank you for being brave and sharing that, because not everybody is willing to do that. And I've said this about myself, and it took me till I was 50 years old. It took me 50 years to figure this out, is that the more I share and the more vulnerable I can be towards people, it actually exudes a lot more strength. And, right. and what has also come out of this whole thing is people turning around and going, hey, guess what? I got issues too. Yeah. And so you can call it you're drinking too much, or a whole myriad of things, right? You're not eating the right things, or you're abusing yourself, or you're not treating people the right way, or I've gone through a divorce like I did, or my dad passing away. And, you know, there's a whole lot of things, you know, at some point in time, it's going to hit you, right? As you just said, it's just, what are you going to do about that when you ultimately take responsibility and you're going to change it? You're going to have that mindset and do whatever it takes to, you know, right the ship.
Well, and you know, it's funny. The big challenge I had was when they were telling me, before you can take anybody, you have to take care of yourself. But by the way, stop being selfish. But I'm like, you're telling me to take care of myself and you're telling me to stop being selfish. And eventually I figured out that's actually spot on. And to be selfless, you have to do work on yourself. Okay. So let me repeat that. To be selfless, you have to do the work on yourself, so that whatever leadership you provide your people, or whatever father figure you want to be to your kids, or the husband you want to be, you can be the best version of that person possible. Because until you do that, you know, and I talk to organizations all the time, and you can drive all the numbers you want with your sales team. But if you're not leading them with authenticity, and you're not building that level of trust, it's all going to fall apart at some point. And what impact did you have on their life? And guess what? Your impact doesn't stop with them. It goes home with them at the end of the day. Okay. And it has something to do with the way they treat their spouses, the way they treat their children, the way they treat the club sports team that they coach, whoever they volunteer with. A leadership's role in people's lives goes well beyond the walls of the office, and you have to work on yourself. And this all started to really make sense to me when I was sitting there, because in the reality of the situation is, alcoholism is a disease of the mind. And there's plenty of them, and that just happens to be mine. And we're all flawed. And some people don't like when I say this, but for me, it works. Run to the fight. Go figure it out and go take care of it.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from your InstaFuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the Superfood Creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MARKP20. Okay? So get your Laird Superfood, and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Yep. I mean, that's, love those words. And the reason why I'm hesitating just a little bit is because, A, I love those words, but second part of that is step into the fear. Mm-hmm. And that's so often what prevents people from actually doing mm-hmm. and accomplishing on different things that they want to do. So right. I don't know. I mean, it's, I just had a former teammate and well, before I get into that, let me add rift on to what you just said.
Okay.
I also think that is super important that we all have some kind of, whether you want to call it mentors, board of advisors, you know, people that we can talk to and really have that trust in that circle of friends mm-hmm. where you can be authentic about what's going on in your life to have other people see you in a different light that maybe we see ourselves because it's a perception right. of looking out and then what's going from everybody else looking back in.
Right.
Right. And sometimes those two things aren't aligned and they need right. to be aligned.
Well, and that's something and I talked about. I just did a solo cast on self-awareness and that's something that and you and I talked about this before. You need to do, you know, you have to have internal self-awareness, but you also have to have external self-awareness. And that's yeah. where a lot of us are very, very uncomfortable because we have to step into it and lean into it and get outside our comfort zone and ask, hey, Mark, what do you think of me as a leader? Am I leading with empathy? Am I leading with authenticity? Do you trust me? Right? Do you trust when I tell you something, do you trust that it's going to come to fruition? And I think we have to really dive into external self-awareness because here's the bottom line. When you're inside the picture, when you're inside the frame, it's hard to see the picture sometimes.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, there's I'm talking to you here on December 11th and this pod will run in a few weeks. And what I just experienced this last weekend was one of my former teammates took his life.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It was just brutal when I heard it. And he was a guy at the University of Washington. He was one of our starting tight ends, Rod Jones. And he actually worked for the University of Washington helping out student athletes. And I don't know his situation. I saw him about a year ago. I've met with him, you know, in the past. Great guy. I mean, not just a good guy, but a great guy. But he had this thing that he was hiding. What I was told was that he had an issue with the bottle and he had some dementia things, you know, starting to set in. But, you know, he kept it inside. And so, again, you, a lot of these things, we all have stuff. I've gone through, you've gone through. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of people who listen to this podcast have their own issues,
right.
but it's really trying to voice it. And there are so many people that are out there that want to help.
Right.
You just got to ask and don't be right. afraid. And that's sometimes going to be the hardest bridge to get over.
Right. And somebody asked me once when I was really in the thick of it and I was Mr. Ego and I was Mr. Tough Guy for a long time there. I mistook physical toughness for mental toughness. Like, yeah. you know, okay, I lost 20 pounds because I'm not eating because of drinking.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'll be okay. I'll keep working my lips off and everything's gonna be okay. But anyway, someone said to me, why won't you ask for help? I go, I don't want to bother anybody. And they put the shoe on the other foot. And they said, well, listen, if someone came to you and they were really struggling and they knew they weren't their true self and they had a ton of potential, wouldn't you help them? And I said, in a heartbeat. Well, all of a sudden, it's like the tables turned. Well, why wouldn't someone want to help you? And that's the thing. It's not a sign of weakness asking for help. It's a sign of strength. And that's something that when I talk to people, and even beyond the dealing with substance abuse or mental diseases, even when I talk to people in the business world, you know, just because you're really diving in with an executive coach, or just because you really want to talk to me after I present, but you might not want your teammates to see you. Yeah. It's a sign of strength. You're trying to get better. You're trying to improve. And if we all did that, we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah. No, of course. Well, listen, so let's stay on the same theme now in yep. transition. We just talked about helping others, and that's what you're doing right now with the Ed Molitor Group. So let's talk about what that's all about.
So the Molitor Group is a result of my years in athletics and my years in the corporate world. The brand is the Athletics of Business, which is the leadership mindset that the traits and behaviors deployed by elite athletes and high-performing teams are key to your success in business.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at it from an individual standpoint and a collective standpoint. So what we do is executive coaching, which is phenomenal. So one-on-one executive coaching, on-site, off-site corporate consulting / training, which really what I have a lot of fun with is when it evolves into group coaching sessions. So we really get everybody engaged. It's not like I'm going to come in here and, okay, here's the strategies I'm going to show you. Now take it and use it. okay, let's talk about how this looks to you. Let's talk about how this works for you. What are your concerns? What are you going to push back on, or what are you really going to embrace? And then the keynote speaking.
That's awesome. So at the end of the day, in one sense, you are kind of getting back to what you started with, which is coaching, right?
Yes.
Yep. Rather than people dribble a basketball, it's really teaching people how to be purposeful, positive, energetic, all to unlock their true potential.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. That's great. So do you have a curriculum or how do you approach that? So people come to you, people in corporate leadership, they come to you and they're like, hey, look, I've got these issues I'm dealing with my employees or whatever. Mm-hmm. And what are the strategies, you know, at a high level that you try to implement? I know it's typically not just a one-time thing. It's, you know, you got to work with people all the time, but how, what's your system?
So the first thing we do, whether it be executive coaching or the corporate consulting, they reach out with a phone call or via the website or via LinkedIn, whichever method they prefer, it works great. And they say, hey, I'm just curious as to what you do and if it fits with what we're going through right now. And let's also note that every person that reaches out to me, they aren't all struggling, but they all have a performance gap that they're trying to fill. And they're trying to get from where they're at to this place where they know they're capable of being, but something's keeping them from moving there. And whether it be competing thoughts, whether it be poor communication, whether it be people not embracing their roles, whether it be poor time, energy, and attention management. So after the call, I'll either connect with them via Zoom or a phone call or in person if it's feasible. And we do a deep dive and fill out a questionnaire together on what's really going on and what's the results that they're hoping for. And then I put a curriculum specific to that together for them.
Okay. And when you get up and public speak around the country, what are your subjects that you're talking about?
Really maximizing your potential, you know, and moving from where you are to where you want to be. And the fact that, you know, giving yourself permission to be great and what it takes to unleash your greatness.
You know, I don't think that you can ever get enough of that because everybody brings a unique splash of their historical experience to the table. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's something to be learned from everybody in every circumstance. And it's just, I love talking to guys like you who offer that, those tips and tricks. Now I wouldn't say tricks, but right. Strategies on how they can truly unlock their purpose. You know, for me, you know, one of the things that I try to talk to people about is not only am I trying to, and I'm talking about myself right now, trying to unlock my potential, but a lot of times people hit certain plateaus and everything is going along just great.
Right.
But after years and years and years and years and years of doing the exact same thing, you got to take yourself and you got to elevate yourself to a different level. And I say you're either growing or you're dying, not literally, but over time, I mean, I see way and far too many people, older people, that the whole thing's about retirement. And for me, that word does not exist, right?
Right,
right. And so there's so much to be done. And so it's almost like you're living to die, right? Right. And right. Like, it's counterintuitive. And I saw this guy, this video the other day of this 90-year-old guy that was doing backflips off a high dive at 20-foot. Dive, you know, twirling around out biking and like, I'm going to keep going on, but I know I'm going to make it past 100. Right. And he looked like it. I mean, he was healthy and, you know, it's like, if you never put oil in your car, you know, at some point in time, it's going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, and that's the beauty of it. There is no finish line. You know, when you work on the behavior skills that are going to drive your process, which dictate your level of success, there is no finish line. I have a 74-year-old dad who just did his 17th triathlon this summer. He runs and bikes and swims every week. He does yoga. He probably lift weights if he had access to them, but and would still play pickup hoops if we could, but he still reads. I mean, religiously reads. He still does Sudoku. He still does crosswords because he knows the mind is so elastic and it's always growing.
Yeah.
And like you said, there retirement. I don't know, even know what that looks like. I probably won't ever know because I just think there's so many cool things to experience and to accomplish.
That's exactly right. This came up the other day and a few people, and I'm saying in more of a complimentary sense than the people bash me on Fox, but yeah, I've been able to experience some cool things like you, but if you take the scope of things that I haven't experienced, I just dwarfs the amount of things that I want to do,
right.
What you're just saying. whether it's charity work, whether it's climbing new mountains, whether it's finding new business opportunities, whether it's traveling across the country and seeing every small town. I don't know what it is, but everybody's got to come up with their own thing. And so I challenge anybody that's listening to really tap into guys like yourself that can help lead the way of clarity to get where they want to go. Because sometimes, you know, you're like, gosh, I'd love to do it, but I don't know, man. I just, you know, I'm thinking about it and should I do this or should I do that? And it's almost like by peeling back the onion and the level of extraction that you can go through, you can ultimately find things that will really flip and drive you. Yeah. And that's when it really gets exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty amazing what you're doing with the Seven Summits. And I've got to imagine some of the conversations you have and some of the epiphanies that you have when you're climbing those summits. But that's what's really cool about it is, you know, I hear people, I just got to get through this. I just got to get to 55 or I've got to get to 58. I've got to get to this point so I can be done with this. You know what I tell them? Just be done with it now. You're 47 years old, for God's sakes. You're 46 years old. Be done with it now and go figure something else out that you're not going to have such a void in your life because you spend the majority of your time at work anyways. So why not do something where you're making an impact that you enjoy doing? And people, for whatever reason in this society, certain generations, and I'm not going to go into it, but they think that hard work and struggle and fun are all mutually exclusive, where to me, the struggle is what makes it so fun.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that 100%. And I think part of my, you know, whatever level of success, now I was never a rock star NFL player, but I made it. I'm in the club.
That's a rock star, by the way.
Yeah. But one of the things that I've thoroughly enjoyed, just like I still do today, it's not about standing on top of the mountain. It's the process. It's all the training. Right. It's back when I was just trying to make it on the field back in college. Right. And I never had that worry because I just kind of stupid kid that just went off on the playground and when I was growing up and I never really had to work beyond just what my talent was. But when I finally figured out that if you want to be here, you got to be doing these certain things, it really changed the game for me and kind of set the tone for life. And so whether it's business, whether it's new sports challenges that I'm doing, again, it's not the day of the race. It's not the top of the mountain. It's the process that you go through, which you got to love. And if you're not in love Amen. With that thing, yep. you got to figure it out.
Yep. Yep. If you learn to love the process, you'll love what the process has to give you.
Yeah, no, it's well said. So, yeah. So tell me about your podcast.
Podcast is, we have awesome guests like yourself on the podcast. So the podcast is the Athletics of Business, and we have business leaders. We have leaders from the athletic world that all are speaking to the same thing, and that's the core intangibles. That's the traits and behaviors of the elite athletes and the high-performing teams. We talk about culture. We talk about work ethic. We talk about the process. We talk about the servant mindset. We talk about success.
Well, what's the servant mindset?
The servant mindset, okay? In other words, I'm here to serve you.
Yeah.
Okay? So you put others before, and I think that's so – if there's a key to success, if you really want a secret to happiness, it's to really embrace the servant mindset. And it was a big light bulb moment for me. And you know this, being a great college athlete and being in the pros, you get so caught up in that world sometimes you're covering your own back, right? Yeah, instead of realizing if you give it all away, it's going to come back to you tenfold. You know, you can get everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. And if you do things for the right reasons for others. And you know, what I have found later in life is if I'm struggling with something, I just go help somebody else. You know, I just keep grinding, keep working, keep doing what I'm going through is going to work itself out at some point. But I put, you know, when I listen, when I talk to people, I listen, not waiting for my turn to talk. I listen to understand. And it shows up in communication. It shows up in your action and your execution. It shows up in your leadership, and it shows up in how you carry yourself on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing, the little golden nuggets for all you salespeople out there, that if you just shut your mouth, and what makes a person a great salesperson is listening, not telling.
Right. Right.
I mean, you'll see people love to talk, and they just will go on and on and on. You can learn so much, and then give you all the like the secrets to penetrate those certain accounts.
Right, right. And if you ever wanted to shift into a sales conversation, I spent years doing that. But here's the thing: if you listen, they're going to give you the answer. they're going to give you the hot button. They're going to tell you exactly what you need to do to sell them. You're going to get them to sell themselves. And that's what's really cool about coaching is when I'm doing executive coaching, I don't tell people. It's not a mentorship. I'm not telling you what to do. You have the answers. Okay. So if I'm working with you, I'm asking you the right questions to help you get to that answer you're looking for.
Yeah. Love that. Okay. Your website is what?
The website for the business is themolitorgroup.com. You can learn all about us. On there, there is a tab for the podcast website, which is theathleticsofbusiness.com. We have an event coming up on April 10th, Don Yeager and I, at Texas A&M in the Hall of Champions, which is going to be absolutely phenomenal. And that is called Unleashing Greatness. There's a tab for that on the website. On Twitter, it's at the Molitor Group. Instagram, I'm Ed Molitor. LinkedIn, Ed Molitor. And Facebook, we do have the Molitor Group business page. We have the Athletics of Business Group. But just go to my personal page, which is me, Ed Molitor. And you can find out everything you want to know about us on that website and all those other social media spots.
Love that. And by the way, I've been to Texas A&M. One of the greatest football environments I've ever been to.
It's pretty cool. And that's why we're having it in the Hall of Champions. So we're having it. It's the Wednesday leading up to the spring game. Okay. Yeah. And part of the event is a VIP panel discussion. And on there is going to be Hunter Goodwin, who played for the Vikings and the Dolphins, a very successful college career and pro career. He's a huge figure in College Station, very well respected. He's an incredible man. I've been fortunate to get to know him. We will have Kim McHugh, who's the first ever female executive of Chevron. She will be on a VIP panel. Jason Boker, who played basketball for us at A&M, who owns Houston Benchmark Builders, and he will be there. We'll have Katie Lee, who works for CC Creations, was a great basketball player there. We'll have Stephanie Remp, who is the deputy athletic director at Texas A&M. And last but not least, we will have Dat Nguyen, the all-time tackle leader at Texas A&M, who had a very good career for the Dallas Cowboys, who's now a very successful businessman in the DFW area. So it's going to be a really cool day. It's a full day of leadership performance, presenting, training, some great stories. We love to teach through stories. And like you said, that's why it's great to listen to so many different people, because somebody's story is going to connect with you. You just don't know whose it is. And it's going to be, you know, behind the scenes tour of Kyle Field, which, as you can attest to, it's a pretty amazing atmosphere. It's a pretty amazing place.
Yeah, no, incredible. So, all right, well, listen, Ed, it's been amazing. I want people to go listen to your podcast. I want people to look you up. You're a guy that is willing to share full
absolutely.
Of...
Reach out to me.
Absolutely. So we're going to push this out and really appreciate you coming on the pod.
Yeah, thanks. And the podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play, as well as going to the website. But Mark, I can't thank you enough. This was great. And thank you again for being a guest on our podcast, and look forward to some more conversations in the future.
Right on, buddy. Thank you so much.
Take care, man.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye. Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life, and I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod, and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.